Welcome to Rogue Cell Radio, hosted by Sean Davis and produced by Brad Peitzik. I'm Brad. Today we have a multifaceted episode. First, we'll be talking with Andy Davis, a city commissioner in Astoria, Oregon. After that, we'll be listening to some messages from veterans we ran into at the KMUN block party.
We're sitting here with Astoria City Commissioner Andy Davis, no relation.
As far as I know, I don't know.
I don't think so.
But my
family. We should maybe we should do that.
We're all related somehow. So let's just get into the questions, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So you had a really interesting and diverse career teaching, filmmaking, baking. I hear about the baking. We do even smell the cupcakes. We're doing cupcakes for the KMUN block party, right? At least April is. She's amazing.
Yeah, nice.
But policy work. So now public service.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the story of how you landed in Astoria in 2015?
Yeah. So first, thanks, guys, for having me on the show.
Yeah.
I'm honored to be here. Glad to meet you and talk to you in more depth. As far as coming to Astoria and how I like settled here, really, I had been teaching overseas in Korea. And my wife and I decided to come back to the States, and she has a sister. So my sister-in-law in Portland, and they had a couple of young kids, and we wanted to be around them. We all have kids around. So we moved to Portland. We were there for a few months and then decided we wanted a smaller town. We wanted to be, you know, somewhere where we thought would fit us a little bit better than Portland felt at the time. And Astoria was a good fit, and we ended up moving out here.
What was it about Astoria that you're like, this is it? This is where we want to be?
I think, so there's part of it that is just, I mean, it's a beautiful place.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, the architecture is great. When we came out here, you know, you get a little spoiled by like the food and the arts and things in Portland. There was great food. There was cool galleries. It seemed like a nice place to be. People were friendly. But also, you know, talking about community service related things, one of the things that stood out to us, and we didn't even know the issue, was when we came, there was a bunch of no LNG signs in people's windows, like all over town.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was like a
big oil gas.
Yeah. So there's a natural gas terminal that that they were talking about putting into Wellington, basically. And there was a big, political activism moment that I wasn't. I came long after it, but a lot of people got active and really cared about that in the community. And honestly, even not knowing all the details of it, just thinking, oh, this is a community where people are plugged in and want to be active. That was attractive to us. Like,
yeah.
Dave, this is a community that people are even putting up in the window, like signs about what they care about in the community. So that was pretty.
So you went from that. How did you start saying, like, I'm going to get involved in public service?
Yeah.
I mean, you volunteered a lot of the budget committees.
Sure.
And comprehensive planning.
Yeah.
So how did you, like, you're here. Oh, we should talk about your day job. What do you do for your day job?
Sure. So I'm a research analyst for the Oregon Health Authority. I work on a project with an entirely too long name, but it boils down to we look at the healthcare workforce. So people who are licensed to do healthcare in the state of Oregon, we do some surveys every year and then report to the legislature, report to the governor's office about what the workforce looks like. And
see, that seems like a job that you're already helping the community. Mm-hmm. So how do you go from that and say, yeah, I'm also going to go a step further and run for office?
I think maybe there's a part of it that's just being wired for that. You know, that them like you, I think, and asking about like how you get involved in this community, I sort of think any community that I was in, I was going to end up wanting to be involved. And that might have actually been a challenge in Portland. Like, I know part of your background is being involved in the Legion in Portland. Mm-hmm. But I felt like as a newcomer into that community, I was just like, man, this is so big. How do you make a difference here?
Right. And I had a little niche, you know.
Yeah. And I didn't feel that, or I didn't have that at the time. And
yeah.
So coming out here, I just thought, okay, how can I make a difference here? What can I do to...
Well, that goes into our next question. So people who do live here and who want to be involved in,
sure.
in
you know, planning or just the community or going into a public office, what would you suggest them do as a, like a first step?
So I think there is a structure here with, you know, committees and things that are topical. I mean, you mentioned, like, I got involved, which my probably first real committee work was budget committee at the county. Both the county and the city have some structures like that where you could volunteer to be on a committee, but that's a relatively long-term commitment. You know, like budget committee, it's a 4-year term. You're saying, I'm going to come back every year and do this process. And not everybody's ready for that or wants to do that.
How often do they meet?
Budget committee's pretty intense, but it's only like in April. You know, you basically you're prepping the budget once a year. So
for the county of Class of Kent,
for either the county or the city, they have a like parallel process, and you might have a lot of meetings in 1 week, but it's only 1 week. But then some of the other things, like we have a planning commission, they might be monthly, or even if there's a lot on their calendar, they might even be more often. So not everybody wants that. I think one of the things that people can do is just come to meetings and make public comment, or just observe what's going on, like literally talk to your friends about it. And I think you, Brad and I, the first time we met was there was a South Slope meeting where people in this neighborhood, literally one of the things we were talking about was the road right in front of the house here.
Yeah.
Where people were saying, hey, the traffic's too fast on this road. Can we get some cameras out here? Can we maybe get some speed bumps, things like that?
So
to like activate in the community and then reach out to.
We still don't have speed bumps,
but we don't want. That was a risky thing to go into, knowing that there is.
we don't hold you accountable.
No, but Brad brought it up that your Ward 1, it stops right.
It stops right over there.
It's true. That was a really interesting. The South Slope meeting was really interesting because it's almost at the end. Peter Pan was where we met.
Yeah,
almost at the intersection of three wards in the city. So
there's three. This is the intersection.
That is the intersection. Yeah, no cat.
Yeah, so
Heather Ryan John at the courthouse.
You represent him.
No kidding.
So you're out of your ward, right?
Yeah.
As you said when you walked in, your powers diminish.
I can feel it calling to me. Just a
minute. And so one of the biggest challenges that Astoria faces is affordable housing.
Yeah.
And trying to get people to work. I know a lot of the business owners, and one of the biggest problems they have is they can't find people to work at their businesses, because people that, you know, start out or entry level jobs, they just can't afford to live here. I mean, what does the city, can that we do something about it? Or what are you doing something about it?
Yeah, so the city's got a bunch of irons in the fire on that, and so does the county. And I think it's a longstanding problem. Admittedly, when I got here, housing was relatively so inexpensive compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
And I know
it's 10 years.
Yeah. I have regrets all the time about not buying housing quicker than I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think things got accelerated a lot during COVID, and, you know, people had an opportunity to say move out here if they were doing remote work or ready to retire. And so that put a lot of pressure on our market and made it even more expensive.
Yeah.
We lived here. We moved in right before COVID hit. And I think our property value is double.
But yeah,
and then now.
Which is great for you.
You're playing on the selling. So that's just more taxes.
Yeah. And I think
they're not that bad. I appreciate what my taxes do.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things that when I moved here, I'm like, yeah, taxes are high, but you actually do a lot with the taxes that we pick.
Yeah.
I don't have any complaints about, because I live on an unapproved road here. I'm like, the roller coaster.
Yeah.
And the grass is mowed. It's like, it's always done. You know, everything that I can ask for is done. And I'm happy about it. I have kids in child at public school. So it's all good stuff.
And public parks are amazing in this town.
We have a lot of parks in this story.
Yeah.
Anyway, movies in the parks and in the summertime.
Yeah. And
that's all good stuff.
That's coming up.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, so for housing stuff, just to let folks know a little bit of what the city's working on. So there is a project that the city just gave an MOU that we're going to get into. Understanding.
Okay.
So there's a project that is Copeland Commons. I'm involved with it in a non-city capacity, but the city just signed an MOU to say that we're going to give a couple hundred thousand to them to help their project out. That's a downtown building that's derelict.
I read it was like 350,000 lira.
I didn't think it was that high. Here we are. So I will say Copeland also got a big grant through the Downtown Association.
Maybe that
I think was closer to that amount. And so 350 might be that amount. So that's a community, and actually the county's given money, you know, like a bunch of community entities. Plus, I think
that's across the street of the Astoria Food Hub.
Correct. So, it's a building that used to be, it's been used for various things, but, used to be some hotel space, used to be single-wing occupancy. So like a boarding house kind of setup, and we're trying to get it renovated, build a new building next to it, have about 16 new apartments downtown. A lot of them will be income restricted, and like you could use a Section 8 voucher or something like that to get housing there. The city's also trying to work with the county to buy a lot that is next to the county main office. There's a parking lot across the street from the county main office, and also across from CCA. And that's the old Dairy Maid building lot. And we're trying to get it so that we can try and develop some housing in that lot and try to build some cluster housing out by the baseball diamond near Safeway. And, you know, there's all kinds of projects that are in the works.
Yeah, but let's
put a lot of time.
Big things for Astoria. I mean, we've had a population of around 10,000 for 100 years.
Yeah.
Man, and it's growing.
Yeah. So we just got over 10,000, and if you look at the census projections, they think we're going to decline again because we got a relatively older population. But I think my,
as Sean spoke, I do want to talk about that because Clatsop County, so kind of shifting gears a little
bit. Yeah,
but Clatsop County, the population of Clatsop County is 10% veterans, and that's almost double the national average.
Yeah,
you know, 5 to 6%. And there's a lot of veterans out here. Of course, a lot of them are retired,
yep,
and they're here. But we do have a lot of veterans. So is the city council aware that we have so many veterans, you know, compared to the rest of the United States?
Yeah, so we have talked about that some. And part of that has come to at least the council that I've been on. So I've only been on for 2.5 years now. But at least since I've been on council, you know, we've worked with the local American Legion Post 12 on they needed. So they want to do some extensive renovations, which I think that's still an active discussion, but they needed to do some repairs to the link. So they came and asked for some help about that. And actually, they were really good about trying to educate us about the veteran community here and their role in it. And so we've learned a lot in that process. But
well, we're both members of the American Legion here in town.
Mm-hmm.
We actually interviewed the post commander,
Don Holliday.
Yeah, it's Doc Holliday. But I went in there once, and you just kind of feel responsible, like the obligation to be a part of whatever American Legion is in your area. And I'm like, why do we have a 3-story building with no windows in the middle of town? And the bartender, she just gave me the keys, but go check it out. I went up there and it looked like a museum. And there's like, there's that big ballroom.
Yeah.
And then the whole ceiling was kind of dropped, but it was all set up like it was like wake or something. It had wreaths and pictures of people. And on the wall, it actually had like recruitment posters for World War II. I mean,
yeah,
it had a front page of a newspaper behind glass of Honolulu the day after Pearl Harbor. I'm like, you got to get some of these things in a museum.
Yeah.
So there's, I mean, it has a lot of history. That building, according to, I was looking through their history books, the top half was the headquarters of Ku Klux Klan, while the bottom was the organization for African American soldiers from World War I. And they just went out came in and out different wars.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of history there with, I think it'd be worth, you know, fixing that thing up because it is just kind of, I mean, I don't think it's an eyesore, but it can improve a lot.
My real hope, and I think this is part of their renovation plan, as I understand it, and you guys can correct me if you know more than I do at this point about it. But, you know, they put external cladding on a lot of the building because they didn't like the style that it had when it was sort of Montgomery Ward building in the past. And I really hope that once we, or not we, once the Legion strips that off, that the building has a historic facade. There's, there are some programs in the city about restoring historic buildings, so maybe they can tap into some of that money to try and restore that. And, you know, we're in a long-term project about Heritage Square, and I think we're well on our way to turning that into a park and remediating and filling the hole. So I'm really
have all our beer festivals around it already.
Well, I think actually the Legion building could be a really a hub of that park, and you know, if we could get some mural work or something on the outside of it, that'd be cool to actually honor the Legion and and be part of that heritage in an active way. I think that would be amazing. So I am hopeful about that project, and you know, the city plays a role in that, but a lot of it's down to the Legion and what they want for the future of that building too.
I know we're a small population, but do we have any veteran-focused initiatives?
So yeah, so the, I think you asked me about the Operation Green Light. So that is something that you know, that admittedly that's a more county-focused. Just as a little aside, you know, you asked me about coming here and talking about veterans issues in the community, and there's a split. And we've got a federal system of government, right? We've got the city, county, state, federal government. A lot of veteran services are concentrated at the county level for local government. And so, like, our role is with something like Operation Greenlight, even,
is
like
to let people know what it is using. City and county buildings to show a green light on Veterans Day to show support for veterans.
And
a call it, right?
And the hope is that other entities and other people in the community will also get involved with that and, you know, change your porch light or light the column up with a different light so that we can show some solidarity as a community for the veterans part of our community thing. And I think that's a great program that's mostly county led, but we're happily signed on to it. I think you know, we've done some in the recent past, we've done some projects where, again, collaborating with other entities like the college and their historic preservation and the Legion, renovating the Doughboy Monument down in Uniontown.
That's amazing. I had about that one in like 1920, something like that, right during World War I, after World War I, I guess. So that it's been there forever. It's amazing. So yeah,
I used to do PT tests, physical training tests at the Doughboy Stadium at Fort Benning.
That's great.
So I know some of the history of the Doughboys. So this isn't a part of Operation.
This is a part of Operation Greenlight, but Purple Heart Day is August. Then we can like to call them up purple. And just ask me for a friend. I got Purple Heart.
So I think that would be awesome. Come and talk to us about that. You know,
I'll go down to City Minga for sure.
Yeah. I know that they've lit the column for different occasions in the past. That sounds like a great one to me, and a very clear color ask. So it should be very doable. I know that they did.
We lost the light. This is one.
As we're talking, we're at lighting.
Yeah, the TV part.
Printed on the
play is just special. This is the radio part that we have to be in by next Thursday, right? So I'm pretty good.
I think that's a very good use case for changing the lights up there. And
so how would we do it? Brunsel wants to come down and say, hey, let's do Purple Heart Day.
So there's two entities that would control that. One is the city. We own the
Cloud Playing a column.
The other is there's Friends of the Estuary column. That's a nonprofit that controls it on a day-to-day basis, runs the shop, keeps things clean up there, things like
that. The ones that take the money and chat,
exactly,
pick up all the balsa wood play.
So no, what they do, I have to resell the good ones. But the nonprofit would ultimately be the ones changing the color up there, but I know they'd have the capacity, so come and ask us.
I will. So I'm interested in just trying to think of some other initiatives that help veterans.
Sure. Because we're looking at, I know your city, and this is more of a county issue, but one thing that we've come up to is that the VSO is one guy with one assistant.
Yeah, or
Tillamook
and the entire county, three
VSOs, and they have less population than we do. We have more vets per.
They have about half the veterans that we do.
Do you know why that's worked out that way?
Well, they put forth a bill to add, like, there was like 0.005 cents for every $1,000 of property tax.
And I think it was less than that. I think they raised it to 0.007.
And so the American Bullshit is now right now. We're talking to, or the American, like, because we have Vet Coffee every Thursday, and we should talk about that. That's one of the initiatives that we start at the Elks Lodge every Thursday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And we talk about stuff like this. And we just got a bunch of vets signed up to do the Columbia Crossing. That'd be 10K. So I've been out training, you know, almost killing myself every other day running. I haven't been running for a year, but. And then, but we did a coffee, and it's a bunch of great young vets, old vets. I mean, for that 10K, we have Iraq, Afghanistan war, but also the Vietnam vets who are going to walk.
Oh, that's different.
And you got a veteran today that volunteered to play music at it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Concert. Oseda? Yes.
Wow.
That.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, he said he might bring some buddies.
So we would love to come down.
Terrible. I think his name's Gary.
Gary. He's cool. He just got that bower. I'm really bad with names too, so I really try hard to remember it.
Yeah, I heard somebody else say his name today.
But I'll tell you, just like that coffee we had, it's really helping a lot of vets, and it's growing. So I'm really proud of that, you know.
Yeah,
we'd love to do stuff like that and just have more of a veteran presence. Because we've seen a lot of veterans, they have skills, education, experiences that aren't used after they get out. And couldn't, you know, every town in Oregon, every rural town has its own set of unique and complicated issues.
True.
A lot of these veterans have the skills and experience to fix issues just like that. So we would love to get more involved and get more of the veteran community, you know, getting them and celebrating it as well.
Yeah, I think that sounds great.
Thank you, Andy Davis, for the interview. If you're just tuning in to Rogue Cell, we'll be finishing up with some messages from veterans we met at the KMUN block party.
Hello, my name is Ray Montgomery. I'm the current president of the Astoria Alliance Club. I'm also a veteran. I spent 12 years in the Army. And I just want to thank all the veterans out there for everything that they've done over the years. Although my service was many moons ago, it was instrumental in how I led my life and what I've done since then. So I want to thank the Rogue Cell organization for setting up this tent, and best of luck, and we'll see you soon. Take care.
Great. Thank you.
Recording now.
Hi there. My name is Tom Jenkins. I'm a retired U.S. Navy sailor, chief petty officer, and also have prior service in the U.S. Air Force, where I was a staff sergeant before I transferred from JetBlue to WetBlue back in 2012. Most of my career in the Navy has been all West Coast and Pacific focused, so two units up in Washington State in Whidbey Island and JBLM, and one unit right here at home in Oregon in Portland, working with submarine force for over 5 years. Really glad to be part of the community out here in the North Coast and building a network, meeting folks who have gone through similar experiences and figuring out what comes next and how can we help each other get the mission accomplished. See you soon.
Hi, I'm JJ Hammond, and I'm a veteran. And veterans mean the world to me. They are the unsung heroes, the background, the the things that, that make people want to aspire to be something better than themselves, because they're serving a purpose higher than themselves, and they're willing to make the ultimate sacrifice. And I think that comes with a lot of baggage as well as a lot of aspirations about what we can all rally around and then work together as a group. Even a small group of people can make it, can change the world and make it better. So that's what veterans mean to me.
Great. Now plug yourself a little bit.
Myself?
Yeah, why not? You're a veteran and you're doing something.
Well, so I'm a veteran. I suffer from multiple different things, but that's not the core of who I am. The core of who I am is a musician and a Renaissance man, kind of. And so I've set out on this mission to create a movement and to create music that people can relate to, that people can emote to, that people can listen to when they're going through tough times, and maybe help them just a little bit. Because what I've noticed is if you help somebody a little bit, that compounds. It's like a compounding interest thing on what makes people better. So I'm not asking for any money. My band name is Echoes and Static. You can find me pretty much anywhere online. And if you like what I'm doing, awesome. Again, I don't want your money. I just want your hope.
One last signal from the coast. JJ Hammond, whose voice you heard earlier, will be performing with Echoes and Static on August 8th at 8 p.m. at the Bro Building event space right here in Astoria. It is located between Menagerie Co-op and Kits Apothecary, inside by Sunbeam Coffee. To quote JJ, "Have you ever known anyone who struggled?" This concert is a statement, a movement, a call to action. Join us. Before we wrap today's episode, we want to take a moment to talk about what Rogue Cell Radio really is. Rogue Cell is a signal for the restless, a community-powered broadcast that blends strategy, storytelling, and local truth-telling, all designed to provoke, heal, and connect. From civic leadership to the voices we capture on the street corners, every episode is a statement of resilience. We're not just broadcasting, we're building. And we want to hear from you. If there's someone in your world with a story worth amplifying, a community leader, an artist, a veteran, a disruptor, nominate them for a future episode. You can send us a name, a voice memo, or just a reason why they matter. Reach out through our website, roguecell.org, or socials, and drop us a line. Or even send me an email at brad@roguecell.org. And a quick update on the Rogue Cell documentary. Editing is underway. The team is deep in post-production, carefully stitching together the raw and resonant threads of our community's story. Stay tuned for more. Stay loud, stay local, stay rogue.
And opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Together with Veterans Northwest Oregon or the Oregon Firearm Safety Coalition or the Department of Veterans Affairs. You can find us at roguecell.vet or facebook.com/groups/roguecell. If you or a loved one is experiencing thoughts of suicide, help is available. Please call 988 and press 1 for veterans. This line is answered 24/7, so there is always someone to help. And with help comes hope, and hope saves lives. The second of the 503rd Rogue Cell is produced by Brad Peitzig with support from Together with Veterans and is hosted by Sean Davis.